Hey everybody!
Oh my.
Welcome to the PC Gamer Show. My name is Tom Marks, assistant editor here at PC Gamer, and I'm here with a very squeaky Tim Schaefer from Double Fine.
Hello. Thanks for having me and my phone.
Yes, and Greg Rice as well.
Hello.
Thanks for joining us, guys. So, welcome.
I apologize for the
phone squeak.
That was such a fun sound.
Don't ever apologize for that.
I'll make it again later.
Okay. We can end the segment with that as well. Nice little cap. Bring it back into the beginning. But we've got a great show for you today. We're here with Double Fine Productions to talk about Psychonauts 2, which you guys just announced last week, and all the other games you guys are doing. Day of the Tentacle. There's too many. Remember Headlander, the Full Throttle remake. It's just you guys got a lot going on right now.
Yeah, we got addicted to announcing stuff.
Yeah,
we couldn't stop. We just announced everything.
Yeah,
and that's all out there. We have no more secrets. We're trying to think of a secret we had anymore, and we couldn't.
There are none.
Yeah,
there's just nothing to tell.
Yeah, it all hit at once.
Now you know everything.
Well, let's start with Psychonauts 2 of what we do know then, and maybe we can see if there's some things that you'll remember as we go along. But so it's no secret that you guys have been wanting to make Psychonauts 2. You said so in the Fig video for it. But so why now? Why did you guys decide to start funding it now?
Well, we right after the game was finished the first time, we had all this backstory stuff we wanted to get to. We wanted to do a second game, but also I wanted to do that heavy metal epic Brutal Legend, and
that
took a few years to do. And then we started making smaller games and self-publishing. I had to get that machinery up and going with Costume Quest and stacking and those games. And then once that was set, we're like, well, let's try and get Psychonauts 2 made. So that was around 2011, and we started taking it on the road and pitching it again, and people reacted a little scared. They're like, oh, it's very creative, but geez, it looks a little risky. Which is always a problem when you're talking to publishers about something like that. And then we had that crazy experience with crowdfunding with Broken Age. But the night before, that's when Notch tweeted about Psychonauts 2. So it was very, like, we were all geared up to do our first crowdfunding campaign. And then we're going to talk about point-and-click adventures, and then all of a sudden everyone wanted to talk about Psychonauts 2 on Twitter. And I was like, oh, but we're about to – oh, the timing is weird on this. And so we made Broken Age, and that took 3 years. And then that's over, and now we're doing Psychonauts 2 because the idea was kind of out there and could not be stopped.
So it was more just finding the time rather than, like, this was the moment sort of thing.
Well, yeah, finding the right time. And we had other things we wanted to do, but just the feeling of, like – this was kind of backing up. You know, there's been a lot of ideas. Psychonauts is the kind of game where anything is really, if it accepts all ideas because it's set in the human mind. So anything you can imagine just fits in that world. You don't have to worry about it seeming anachronistic or anything, because if it could happen in someone's imagination, it can happen in the game. So every time you meet someone who has an interesting personality or an obsession or some sort of just quirk about them, you're like, what would that look like manifested in as a level? And like, what would it look like inside their brain? So I kept like this old Google Doc open, you know, and just keep adding brain ideas to it. And that plus all the backstory stuff that we kind of planted seeds for in the first game were just germinating and getting really germy. So we had to open the door and air it out. There you go.
So what can we expect from Psychonauts 2? I mean, obviously we're not – I'm assuming you're not in the camp setting anymore, right? And but you guys have – you've – you said you were collecting brain ideas. Do you have a solid idea of, like, what you know the plot of the game is going to be as well?
Yeah. It is set – you know, the first game was set in a psychic summer camp with little kids, and Raz becomes a psychonaut at the end. He gets, like, a field promotion. And then you hear Truman Zenodo has been kidnapped, and they rush off, and they go on this rescue mission. But the second game is set in the Psychonauts headquarters after Raz's comeback, a hero – and sees the actual spies, the international espionage ring known as the Psychonauts, in their actual headquarters, and finds that the organization has its own kind of politics and also some nefarious schemes going on, and it seems like the organization has fallen into some hard times and needs Raz even more than he needs them. So he's going to be, you know, being in that as a new kind of hub world, like the summer camp.
Cool. So it's gonna follow a similar formula of like kind of a smaller overworld with then you jump into people's minds.
Right. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
I think, are we going to see the collectibles and the hidden stuff and all that sort of thing? Are you thinking of bringing that sort of thing back?
Well, I mean, we want to be true to the original game. So it will still be an action-adventure platformer. There will be things you collect in it. And we really want to look over all the mechanics for the game and really see, okay, what have we learned in the last 10 years? You know, what have we had never made that kind of platformer game before, you know, and we wanted to kind of look at everything. I think everything's on the table, but it still is going to be an action-adventure platformer, and we want to add a couple new side powers, you know, and shuffle around. I think the controls, I think, will probably change a little bit, but hopefully just everything people liked about the first game and more.
Cool.
We'll be back.
We're actually entering this kind of almost golden age, as it seems, for Psychonauts. Platformers. Well, oh, Psychonauts, yeah. Definitely, but 3D platformers are kind of coming back a bit. There's Psychonauts 2, there's Yooka-Laylee got funded as well, and a lot of people are saying that VR is actually going to be a really exciting place for the 3D platformer because you have more depth perception and stuff like that. Are you guys considering VR at all for this game?
We are doing a VR game, a Psychonauts VR game, but it is a first person.
Okay.
But I think once we have Psychonauts, the new one, up and running, we can also look at that. But I think it's pretty experimental. I mean, I do think it is a genre that has been underserved. Much like when we did our first Kickstarter, we were looking at adventure games because people were saying, hey, whatever happened to those? You know, like, can't we make one? And that was true. But in the back of my head, I was thinking about, you know, what about these other games that you really don't see? There were a lot of them at one point when after Super Mario 64, I think a lot of people started like trying to make their own of those, and there were just, you know, a ton of the games like that. And then all of a sudden there were just none. And it was both the 3D action platform part of it, but I think also the fact that they were stylized art and that people always worried about that looking childish, you know what I mean? So we went through this whole period of everything being just dark and gritty and like people covered in mud and just, you know, and I get that, and I think those games are good, but I feel like, you know, whatever happened to those really bright, colorful games with humor and where people weren't, you know, trying to be super dark all the time?
So do you not think it was anything to do with the actual gameplay of like the 3D platformer? You think it was more what the style of what those games were, the style those games were usually in?
Yeah, I was privy to some discussions at publishers about what they wanted to do and what they saw as the problem with those platformers, and usually it was age-related. They're like, these games are meant for, like, 10-year-old kids or something like that. That's what they thought, and which is weird because I totally enjoy them now, you know, and I'm several 10-year-old kids put together standing on top of each other in this suit.
Maybe that's why they appeal to you then.
I think it just needed time too, right? Like everything's cyclical. It just feels like it's been long enough that people want that kind of game again. There hasn't been one for a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, I think it also was a bit of just presentation and getting a bit of space from that gritty time. And
Well, Psychonauts is interesting because Psychonauts, although, you know, it was at a summer camp and it was about kids, it had a lot of really dark and creepy and weird things in it. That was one of the best parts about it, was that it wasn't just this little kid adventure. I guess since the audience has now grown up too, it's 10 years on, are you planning on kind of pushing those dark themes a little more, or do you want to try to keep in the tone of the first game as well?
Well, I think it was lighthearted most of the time, but it was about the human mind. So I think it was very, you know, real look about how people have these traumatic events sometimes that they're hanging on to. And I think I've always been inspired by the writing of like Kurt Vonnegut. If you read his books, they're always really, really funny, but they don't pull punches when it comes to the tragic things that happen in people's lives and the effect that has on them. So I think Psychonauts was the same way, but overall pretty lighthearted. Pretty lighthearted game, but I think that's what makes it. That's what makes the happy parts of the game more happy, because it goes into all the ups and downs of the human soul.
Well, I mean, I think I can speak personally where the meat circus for me was like, that was like hard to get through when I was younger. Like that was a terrifying moment. But
you mean hard to get through? The platforming was hard?
A couple bugs.
Yeah. We fixed them. We've been addressed. The PC version is the best version because we fixed a lot of those bugs.
Well, it's kind of great too that you guys did go back and you supported that. What was the reasoning behind patching the PC version like that? Because you could have just kind of released it on PC and been, eh, we're done.
Yeah. Well, we did it because we could. I think that was cool. The main thing, especially back in that period where things were a lot less open on the consoles. The PC was like one of the only places that a self-published independent studio like us could have control of our final product. Like we didn't have to apply to anybody, you know, except for Steam or we could just make our thing as good as we wanted, and that was great. That was a great venue for that. So we went, and there was these issues about Meat Circus that always bothered me. These bugs that made some parts of it much harder. It's supposed to be hard, and there's some parts of it still really hard. But we wanted to fix some of those bugs. We wanted to add achievements. You know, we wanted to, and have it be uncapped by things that matter, especially to PC gamers, which are like, if I have a really nice video card, I want the resolution to be as high as I want, and the frame rate to be uncapped,
and widescreen and things like that. And I think it was also just the time where we got the IP back, and so now we had control, and Steam had come around and gave us the ability to be able to patch and update our games, and we'd seen the success that a lot of our friends and studios had had on Steam, so. That was actually a big initiative at the time, was getting more and more of our stuff on PC and Steam. And it's a lot of the reason we've been able to be so successful recently is because we have all these games that have been selling now for the last few years on Steam, supporting the studio directly.
And you guys are moving into, I mean, this isn't a new move, but you've been publishing a lot more games too. Like Gang Beasts, I know, is one of my favorite games in the world. Yeah. And you guys have been helping that grow, so to speak. What's the intention behind just like moving into a much broader Double Fine like you have? And this is not saying this is a new thing. Just like why did you guys want to do that rather than just making your own stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a lot of just giving back to the industry and just trying to help create and grow this kind of independent spirit between developers and putting more of the power in developers' hands. And we've learned a lot ourselves from the self-publishing that we've done, and it just feels nice to be able to kind of extend that to other teams who are newer or might not have experience with a lot of those things. And it's just also helped getting out the word out about games we're excited about personally.
Cool.
Yeah, because we're like them in that we're both independent, but been through this a bunch of times, and we know about the various platforms, the people involved, and also we get a lot of eyeballs and exposure to our stuff, and it seems like it's too many eyeballs. We want to spread those eyeballs over the other projects, like a delicious pâté. Eyeball pâté.
I don't think I've ever heard eyeball pâté before, so that's...
Because you never tried it.
It's true. Vegetarian. I don't think eyeballs are vegetarian, unfortunately.
I only eat the eyes.
Really?
Doesn't that sound creepy?
Oh, God.
I just do eyes.
Oh, no. I think you've just accidentally revealed a new character from Psychonauts 2.
Played by Rutger Hauer.
Oh, God. Well, let's talk a little bit also about crowdfunding and FIG specifically, because this was a site and kind of a program that you guys launched, like a year ago, right? Around then?
We started talking about it around that time, but...
Okay.
I mean, it dates back all the way to our first crowdfunding campaign where everyone was like, what's going on? This is all so new. How'd you get all this money? This is crazy. Some people liked it, and some people were like, what is this thing? It's very suspicious and skeptical. Mm-hmm. And we loved it, and it was a great thing for our community because they felt really empowered by it. But there was this nagging sensation of like, first of all, we want to go bigger and have it not just be for little games, but for games like Psychonauts 2. And also, even though I love the original mission of Kickstarter, which is like to make creative works happen and let people, pick their favorite creators and help them achieve their vision of this creative work and patronizing the arts, and I think that's great. But there's this question of like, what if you're actually trying to do that and also have a hit, like make money? What if you make a bunch of money and the people who helped you make that happen don't get anything? That feels like that's going to create this tension, and it'll be kind of just always an itch. And so I was asking back then even, how can we share the royalties with the backers? And they're like, you can't do that. That's illegal. And I was like, it can't be illegal to give money away. And they're like, yeah, it is, because it's regulated. That turns it into an investment. which is regulated by the SEC. And,
right.
You got to be really careful with that stuff. And it was true. And then our old COO, Justin Bailey, was telling me about how the Jobs Act has changed, and there's parts of it that are allowing that kind of investment and unaccredited investment. And we can use that to give back to our backers in a real meaningful way if the game is really successful.
And the unaccredited investors is that's starting next year, is that right? Or you guys are taking kind of reservations for that sort of thing. Yeah. And so, like, I guess how much of FIG is meant to still allow those people to be investing in the game? Because it seems like, I mean, personally, I'm not much of an investment kind of guy or expert or anything like that, but it seems like a very small return compared to a lot of what people invest in, you know, like what you think of as an investment. Is FIG kind of in an in-between between like Kickstarter and like a big investment? I'm sorry if I'm rambling, but... Mm-hmm.
I mean, Greg's really crunched the numbers on that, about the return on that. But yeah. I think it is a different kind of investor where, you know, people could invest in oil sands if they wanted to, right? There's a lot of options out there. And I think someone who's drawn to this is someone who has a feeling of an interest in the games industry, a knowledge about who the players are, and feeling like seeing potential, you know, a potential upside. Like, here's a game that's had its cult following for many, many years, and I think it has this opportunity to be really big. And I'm also interested in helping make it happen, but I also think it could be successful, and I want to share in that.
Cool. And so it's targeting more of an audience that's invested in the project emotionally as well as financially, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's a lot of, like Tim said, there's a lot of other things you could invest in that have a potential for like 10 or 20 times return, which the game industry is not a place to make a ton of money.
Right.
But there's a lot of really hardcore fans that are big, passionate fans of the game and want to give to the studio. And the ability to even make some of that back, if not all of that or more, is enough for them.
I mean, I think the games industry obviously is a place to make a lot of money, because a lot of people do make a lot of money in the games industry.
Few people make a lot of money.
But I think that we, you know, on our investment site, we have to be careful about, on the FIG side, of promising anything, because it's an investment. Investments can go a lot of different ways. So there are tools for just, you know, there's a little calculator for, like, putting in your own assumptions. Like, oh, I think they'll sell this much, and, like, let's slide that around, and this is what my return can be. So people can see that, you know, there's what the break-even point and all that is. And it's still, you know, we wouldn't be doing this if we didn't think it was a good investment. Like,
right.
It is a good investment, and it also is, you know, being part of this whole new thing. Because I think this kind of equity-based crowdfunding is going to be a huge thing eventually. I think people are, you know, watching this to see how it happens, but once it's successful, I think it's going to become more and more interesting and a bigger, bigger thing, and probably someday not just for games.
And you guys are, the last time I checked this morning was just over 2 million of the 3.3 million.
That's what I saw last.
We can bring it up.
Oh, man. Yeah, and it's pretty even split, too, between the rewards and the investment piece of that, too.
And that's, there we go, fig.co, if anybody is interested in seeing Psychonaut 2's investment.
Not that I care. $2,062,000.
There you go.
$61.
Of the 3.3. And that 3.3 number, you guys said you chose because of Broken
random.
Age? Out of a hat. You just drew seven numbers.
It's just, look at that guy pointing at you. So yeah. He's like, you, demanding.
Imposingly, yes.
Good thing I'm just not wearing the same shirt. we know we picked it because that's what we raised at our first Broken Age campaign, and it was in some ways just kind of a calling back to that, like a celebration with our backers, because that was a really amazing moment when we made that, and they were part of that, and so it was like, look, we made this together. And also, it's a number that people who were not into crowdfunding and were detractors of it were like, I can't believe you got $3.3 million. It was used as kind of like this like a negative statement, and we're here to be like, no, we're super proud of that number, and we did great things with it, and we put a lot of our own money into that game to make it great. But there's the top achievement in Broken Age. If you get it, it's called 3.3.
Yeah,
so it's been a special number for us.
And we spent a lot of time also figuring out how much money we'll be able to put in, and talking with external partners about getting money from them as well. And so I think we just also knew that at that amount, we'd be able to get a budget around the size of the first game too.
So it was a convenient number to both be what you needed and also just make a reference.
Yeah.
So talking about Broken Age as well, there was a lot of kind of negative feedback during the development of that game and kind of between the first and the second part. And what do you – I guess what do you think of that? Like what was your reaction to that during that development? And then also why do you think it happened?
Well, it was a really big surprise because we had this kind of private relationship with our backers for a long time. We were just talking to them. And then it kind of went outside of that for the first time, and we got this really angry hate mail about what had happened, which is, looking back on it, I feel kind of crazy because at the time, I think there are a lot of people who, like I said, when crowdfunding starts, they're like, what is this Ponzi scheme, crazy scam, right? And there were just – a lot of people were like – saw potential for like, what if one of these projects doesn't happen? And then when they had heard something that they misinterpreted as the biggest one that almost – I think the biggest one that had happened at that point is going to go down like the Titanic. This is what we've been waiting for. This is it. Oh, my God. Let's get them. And the sharpened torches – would you sharpen a torch? And they're flaming pitchforks or vice versa. And they were all ready to storm the castle with that. And we're trying to explain like, no. Like we made a really conscious decision to make the game bigger than what we originally got from that 3.3. We could have cut the game down to fit in that, but we're like, no, since we launched that campaign, we've now generated some revenue through Brutal Legend PC, which we self-published, and through the Humble Bundle that we did, and made our own money. And we decided instead of taking that home as a bonus to like put that into Broken Age and made it a better game. And we never asked any backers for any more money. And so all those people sending the hate mail, I think, had nowhere to go after that. They're like, oh, you know. But they... when we finished the game and shipped it, they didn't come back to say, like, okay, we're wrong about that. Whoops. Okay.
I think it's also just a lot of, like, new information for people. Like, there haven't been a lot of really transparent game development processes on the level of Broken Age. And so people were just learning a lot as they went about how much games cost and how long they take and the ups and downs of development that are common to every game development process.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know how schedules change on almost every game. Every game they played was probably late. And this is a very public thing, and people saw for the first time. A lot of people just couldn't comprehend that number, $3.3 million. Surely nothing could cost $3.3 million. We're just looking at Destiny. Like, I don't, you know, could not even comprehend the amount of money that game probably cost.
Right.
And hundreds of millions.
But now, hopefully, after being really transparent, showing the documentary, which people can watch for free on YouTube, and then shipping Broken Age and also Massive Chalice, two really successfully funded crowdfunding games, and we've shipped them, that we have the credibility to do it again.
Well, I was going to ask about that, actually, because you guys have both been in the games industry for a long time. Is this just kind of how game development is and has always been, and it's now just people can see it and they didn't know that? Is that kind of how you perceive every time, or most of the times, like at least your own crowdfunding campaigns have gotten under fire?
Well, I mean, game development is the complexity of software engineering multiplied by the subjectivity of art and entertainment, right? You know what I mean? It's like this weird thing that's like, it's hard to know when something's done because is it good? Is it fun? The schedule says it's done, but people don't like this part about it and we got to change it. And it's different at every studio. I always, you know, to put a priority on making the game I want to make. And it's like the game starts to tell you at a certain point, like, I want to be this size. I want to be this big. I want to have this feature. And we've always really listened to that voice that the game has and made the game the way it should be made. And I think there are other studios where you can only really have one top priority. And so there's some games that are made that are like the top priority is the schedule. And things change because of that. And everyone tries to get them all right. We all try to get quality time and money, like everything all right. But we've always prioritized making the game we want to make because it's forever once you launch it.
It's even more
of patches, except for the patches.
Yeah. It's more of a challenge, too, when you're doing something new, right? Because then there's a lot of unknown iteration and prototyping that needs to happen, and that kind of stuff is tough to quantify up front as well.
Yeah, and most games, when they're, it's not like a movie where you can read a screenplay and be like, I kind of get what this movie is going to be. I can see it in my head from the script. Most games are like, we don't know what's going to be fun. I have this idea. I think it's going to be fun. We're going to prototype it. And you build some stuff. And then, you know, at a certain point in mid-production on almost every game, you're like, okay, now I get it. Now I get what this game should be. And we're going to cut that and we're going to add that. And now we can actually make a schedule that makes sense. But it's usually not the beginning, where on the graph of things you know about the game is zero. And then by the end of the game, the graph is really high. But you have to make your schedule when it's zero. And then you should try and make another schedule here when you know about half the information. And then that's why games are often delayed, but it's just because people are trying to make them really good so that you'll enjoy playing them.
So let's also talk about kind of the slew of remakes and revivals that's been happening lately, because you guys are doing Full Throttle, you're doing Day of the Tentacle, did Grim Fandango, Psychonauts 2 is now another sequel. Why are you suddenly revisiting all these old titles of yours?
I mean, part of it is just that a certain age of the industry, we've now been around where a lot of our first games are either hard to find, hard to play, hard to make work on your computer. Like Grim Fandango was all those things. You couldn't buy it legally. You had to pirate it or find it on eBay. You had to go do a fan-created emulation site to get to run. And that's really – we're really lucky to have fans that keep our old games alive, like ScumVM and ResidualVM. But we wanted to make that easier for people to play, make it so you could actually buy a legal copy of it, and then also give stuff to it that only we could give. Like, we knew where the concept art was. We knew where the original digital files for the voice were that were uncompressed. And we could talk to the original creators and do commentary track and add these things to it that, as good as the fan versions were, they couldn't do that. So we could do this really nice remastered version of Grimm. And it went so well that we did it again with Day of the Tentacle, and we're going to do it with Full Throttle. And part of it is just because those are games that we made and we loved and want to keep relevant. We want to keep them playable, you know? Like, books, you don't necessarily worry about them. I mean, they go out of print, but you can usually, you know, find them somewhere. But, like, games, they run the risk of just vanishing. And so keeping them current, I think, is an interest. So now we've been around long enough that we have this, you know, we have a backlog of these things to keep current while doing new stuff, you know, doing brand new stuff like Headlander, which is a whole new IP that we're doing, that Lee Petty is making a Double Fine. And Psychonauts is going to be not just a nostalgic throwback game. It's going to be a very new, you know, contemporary game. So I feel like now that we have multiple teams at Double Fine, we can do both. We can keep the old stuff current and plunge ahead with new stuff.
Well, with Psychonauts being, as you said, a brand new game, not a remake or a remaster or anything like that, do you feel any pressure of, like, I mean, I'm sure you feel pressure, but, like, what's the most important thing for you to get right, do you think? Like, because the fans are going to have tons of expectations. They've been wanting this game for so long. They've been calling for it. So, like, what are you most worried that you don't want to screw up, basically?
Well, I want to have to do both things of being really true to the original and really continue that. So if you played one game and then played the second game, it would feel like it had the same personality, not change tone or anything like that, and really capture all the things that people really liked about the first game, with the humor and the story and the crazy twist on the gameplay in every level. You know, we have to re-nail that. And then I think we want to improve on things regarding, like, the camera and things that we just didn't know a lot about at the time, and really nail the look and feel of it and the way the character motion happens, which is something we had to do retroactively with the game. Like, we got halfway through the development of Psychonauts, we're like, oh, we just don't like the way this guy feels, and we just had to, like, let's go redo it. And so we redid it all so he's snappy when he jumps on the ladders and stuff. But this time, that's the first thing that we're going to do and build out from that character.
Very cool.
Yeah, I don't want to speak for Tim, but I feel like with Broken Age, I was more nervous about that, of, like, living up to the legacy of Tim's old adventure games with a brand new IP that we haven't talked about, that people are backing without knowing what it's going to be, where here it's like we kind of know what Psychonauts is, and people just want more of that. And I feel like that's an easier task to take on than a whole new unknown IP from scratch.
And Broken Age started even just as the Double Fine adventure game, right? Yeah. So you think it's easier to be going in with expectations and with kind of the roadmap rather than just make something new with no expectations?
I mean, for me, in some ways, it doesn't matter, because you can think about that stuff, you can set some goals, you can write them down, but in the end, it's still just you and a blank piece of paper, and you have to follow the same kind of creative process you did before, which is really more about inspiration. What makes you feel inspired? What is the character, you know, wanting to tell you and go? And you, at the end of the day, you're alone with that creative work, and you have to trust yourself to make it. And I think that's no matter what, if there's one person waiting for what you're doing, or if there's, you know, thousands and millions of them.
And jumping back to remakes real fast, I wanted to bring up, we now have System Shock is going to be getting a remake of the original, and then also System Shock 3 was just announced today. And I was curious, did you ever play the original System Shock? Was that kind of a...
Seamus worked on that, right?
Really?
I think so.
Was looking,
is he a little
bit
for him?
Yeah.
That was a nice moment. Right? Sorry. Yeah. it just seems like remakes are on the brain with people, mm-hmm. or reduxes and that sort of stuff.
Yeah, like the industry's been around long enough now that there's a lot of games like that people might have missed, and they're really important to the industry, so it's nice to bring them back.
Well, I'm trying to think. I need to tell you, when I played Psychonauts when I was younger, and I played it for the first time,
How old were you when you played Psychonauts?
I think I was probably 14.
That's cute.
Yeah.
That's adorable.
Yeah, I know. I'm a youngin'. I couldn't drive. When I played Psychonauts, I was so terrified of all of the people in all of the buildings. I thought that they were going to, like, in the ward, the insane asylum. Mm-hmm. I just thought they were, like, going to attack me. I didn't have a single conversation with any of them before I put the door on their head. I would always sneak up to them and put it on as soon as I could. And then I would get into their mental, like, I would get into their brain, and I would have no idea what was going on because I had none of the context. I didn't have any idea of who they were or what their problems were. And I was just thrown into this, like, problem to solve. The only one that didn't happen was, like, I guess the milkman, because he's very kind of intentionally talky. Yeah, he's talky. Yeah.
I mean, I feel like that's great because, one, it's awesome to have an effect on people, whether it's fear or whatever. Like, that someone actually was afraid of the characters is hilarious. And also, I kind of enjoy – I'm someone who enjoys confusion as an entertainment option. Like, when I was a kid and I got the Atari cartridge for my 2600 and I was so excited about playing it, I plugged it in and started playing without reading the instructions. And I was like, what? Am I a square? And there's a duck chasing me and I have an arrow. And I didn't know what was going on, but that was a really pleasant feeling that I had. I think when people talk about, like, open world, like, Zelda games, and they're just like, I don't know what's in this cave. And, like, you're not being led through it. I think people – so I'm happy that we confused you a little bit.
It's yeah.
a special kind of enjoyment out of that.
Yeah, no, playing – there is, as our staff writer Chris Livingston knows, playing a game wrong can sometimes be just as amusing as playing a game right. So mm-hmm. I do hope that there's room to be duped by the design, I guess to say.
And they're supposed to be – they're not scared. I mean, Gloria, when she's wielding that trophy, is supposed to be pretty terrifying.
Like, for me, it started, like, with – I can't remember her name now – in the plant – room.
Gloria.
Yeah. Okay. There we go.
Excuse me. I knew what you were talking about.
Yeah.
She's super sweet, and then she's blah, and then she has this trophy she's going to kill you with.
Yeah. It was. So I played your game incorrectly, and I guess 10 years later, I'm sorry.
Like, you had
about
one
that.
Of the most optimal experiences with that.
Well, I did enjoy it quite a bit. So there you go. Well, I think we're out of time, though. Thank you very much for joining us,
awesome.
Tim and Greg. It's been a blast.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah. I think we're all looking forward to see what'll happen with Psychonauts 2.
Thanks for backing.
Yeah, at this point, it seems like you guys are set to hit the target, knock on all of the wood.
Yeah.
I don't mean
don't
to jinx you.
It.
Yeah, I'm sorry,
But it's going faster than our last one.
Yeah. Good.
So.
Well, thank you very much for watching. We'll be right back with James and Tyler and the rest of the PC Gamer Show. We're just going to take a quick break, say goodbye to Tim, and we'll be back for the rest.
This is the book ending.
Yes.
Sorry.
No problem. Welcome back to the show. Thank you, everybody, for sticking around. You will not regret it, I promise. Once again, I'm Tom Marks, here now with James Davenport, our associate editor.
Hello.
And Tyler Wilett, our executive editor.
Also hello.
So you guys, I assume, were watching. Otherwise, you hate me and you don't want to hear me talking.
I wasn't watching.
No.
Because I had work to do.
Nah, I was watching, making sure everyone's behaving in the comments. Good job, everybody.
You just approved the chat?
They're pretty good.
They were
nice.
Tame?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Well, they can be not tame. It's okay. Tim Schafer was here. Worth being excited about.
Yeah.
But I thought that was interesting. I really was happy that he got into some details about the game and, like, kind of the form it's going to take. I was really excited to hear that it's another smaller world with people to jump in. I guess that is actually correct.
That's what to do
in
that game.
So, James, you played Psychonauts, and you're a big fan of Psychonauts.
Yeah, many, many times.
And I am as well, as I embarrassingly revealed at the end of that stream. Tyler, did you ever play, or...?
I have played Psychonauts.
Yeah.
I'm not a Psychonauts super fan.
Okay.
Like
that's
the
fair.
Two to my right.
Yeah.
But
that's still fair. But, yeah, it was really encouraging to hear that they want to keep the tone the same, that they want to keep the vibe the same. They want to make sure it feels like a sequel rather than like just a new game, basically. I appreciated all of that.
Yeah. I mean, it's so early on. Like, we don't even know if it's going to get funded. I think it's going to be funded, but it's hard to say what it will actually look and feel like, and what 2017 is what they're aiming for, something like that.
A ways off, which makes sense.
I think the Psychonauts had a very distinct vibe to it, kind of combining the character platformer with elements of adventure gaming in a cool world, and I'd be down for more of that, even if it's not necessarily air quotes modern game design, you know, because they seem to do well with their niches. So
what about you, Tyler? Like, if they just released a 3D platformer exactly like it was in 10 years ago, you know, obviously more technologically advanced and, you know, that sort of stuff. But do you think that would fit into this market?
Well, I mean, what would they do outside of that? I mean, they're doing this for fans of the original, right? Yeah. So what would be the point of doing Psychonauts 2 and making it something else? What else could it be?
Assassin's Creed.
Well, I guess I was assuming that it was going to be... I guess, like you said, jokingly say Assassin's Creed, but, like, you know, bring sort of aspects of that in. Like, I was actually surprised to hear that they were going for another small world. I thought that they would make it bigger, more open.
Hmm. Yeah, I guess that is the trend, or especially was the trend from, like, some reboots we've seen of stuff. Mm-hmm. And also, this is kind of unrelated, but the move from, like, 2D to 3D, like when... you know, when all the 2D platformers became these open world games for whatever reason, because that was decided that was the next thing to do. And then to take this, smaller environments and make it into like the giant open world thing, I guess. But I never seen Double Fine as a company that was ever really interested in that kind of scope of a game. I mean, they've just made a very much traditional point and click adventure. So it just never really occurred to me that it would be anything other than the Psychonauts 2 that they would have made if it were funded directly after Psychonauts. You know, that was sort of my assumption.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like that's the direction. Like, if they were to make, Psychonauts 2 immediately after Psychonauts, this is, I imagine, they would have probably a similar design.
Yeah, and it's... I liked what Tim had said, too, about how every time he thought of, like, a brain level or, like, a character to jump in, he would just jot it down. So this could be, you know, a decade's worth of notes about the game kind of now getting refined into an actual game.
Yeah, could be some – he's probably had some thoughts between, you know, then and now.
So were you, James, disappointed at all? But ouch, man. Wait, I just realized I got burned. Can we go back? Oh God.
Okay.
I just need to recover from
anyway,
that. This room is hot, and that was like hotter than I felt that burn through the heat, man.
It's all good.
But I was gonna ask before I realized that I just got totally trounced on. When I asked about if he was going to kind of go a little more adult, a little darker, you know, with the themes, it sounded basically like the answer was no. That was the vibe I got. Obviously, he didn't say that specifically, but his response to it was, well, the first game was kind of lighthearted and mostly in parts, and there were parts that were scary, but, you know.
Yeah. And I was curious about that primarily because, I don't know, the first game, actually, I was thinking about it actually while the show was happening, and the first game does go some pretty dark places. It just deals with them in, you know, in the context of this goofy world. And I was just curious to know if, you know, since Raz is all grown up and he's doing big boy stuff now, that maybe he might deal with some, you know, it seems like an interesting place to explore heavy themes. And I would hope that they entertain that to some extent, you know, depression and anxiety and whatever that happens to be. maybe the mind of a gamer gator or something like that. And see how it goes.
Well, they addressed some of that depression and anxiety. I'm just going to breeze over that. they addressed some of that depression and anxiety stuff in the first game, but veiled, right? It was always like the Napoleon level was all about, you know, not somebody freaking out about not being able to live up to what their ancestors right. or their parents did. And there was a lot of that idea of those complex emotions being expressed very approachably, I guess, yeah. or like with a layer of obfuscation. But yeah, I think it'd be interesting for them to go a little darker, but it sounds like they're not going to. I'm interested in the plot, actually, what he was saying about they go back to the Psychonauts headquarters, and he actually, like, it was interesting to hear the Psychonauts described as an espionage agency, because I'd never really thought of it that way, but I guess that's always been the
there's
plot.
There's shades of that, yeah. I mean, of, like, kind of the spy, like, high-tech spy headquarters. And yeah, I mean, it's kind of a genre fiction that they have their own twist on. It should be cool.
But yeah, I'm interested. I'm intrigued and interested. I also liked talking to him about Fig specifically, because it sounded like they understood, or they said this basically, that the investment part of Fig is there. It's not the point of Fig, right? The point of Fig is not to, like, have people invest and then make money off of this game as an investor. That's part of what happens out of it, but really it is to help people be helping them fund a game, you know, and do crowdfunding. And I'm glad that they know that, basically, is how I came away from that part of that conversation, because it seems to me that if they came in and they were like, oh no, it's totally, like, you can totally make money off of this and it's how you do it, then I would have been like, that's a little weird, but that wasn't what they said.
Seems weird to have the investment option at all then. I mean, either it's an investment or it's not, right? Like, why would I be interested in investing in something as an investment if I wasn't going to make money or I wasn't planning on making money? That's the reason you invest in stuff. So I do find it kind of odd to combine crowdfunding, where it's essentially a donation saying, I like you, I like this, I want this to be made, and then traditional investment, where now it's partially that, and I recognize that I might lose the money, but I'm incentivized to invest a larger amount because there could be a return on it. Like, I don't know how to... I can't think of, like, for me, if I had the kind of money that I could invest, like, I don't know if I'd ever be in a mindset where I was like, I like this thing and I want it to get made and I also want to make a financial investment to get money out of it, but I'm okay with losing that because I care about this thing. Like, I'd probably trust my money to an investor, and it doesn't seem like – I don't know how good an investment it is, because I'm not definitely not a financial expert. If you look at my bank statement, you'll know that. But, like, I don't know if this is a good investment or not. I'm not really sure. I don't feel like a lot of, like, big time investors would be jumping at the opportunity. So because of what you just said, it sounds like the goal isn't necessarily to make loads of cash. It just seems like two conflicting ideas to me: investment and, like, fan support.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I mean, maybe it'll work out, but I can't really wrap my head around why I would be a part of the investment side of things.
Well, to me, it's just personally, it doesn't appeal to me as an investment thing at all. But I like that it's a more, I guess, it's a crowdfunding platform that's more conscious of the backers that are funding it. You know, it's like the way he put it was, he was like, we thought it was, he said if they could have just given Kickstarter backers part of the proceeds from the actual game, they would have, but then someone told them that was illegal, right? And so they couldn't. And so they made this new thing where you can actually invest and you can become an unaccredited investor and be part of that.
Well, you still have to be accredited at this point.
Right, at this point.
Yeah.
But they're still accepting pledges for unaccredited.
So you've got to know the risk. So I'm not worried about anyone who does invest. I mean, that's their prerogative, but maybe it does create a sort of different kind of accountability on Double Fine's part.
Yeah.
Because now they do have people who are expecting a return, you know, and probably with a certain timeline. But, you know, from watching their work in the past and seeing some of the really candid stuff in the documentary, you know, I don't expect like this to happen without any sort of delays or hiccups, because I can't think of a single kickstarted sort of game project or game project period. We may not know about every hiccup, but that hasn't like gone through. I mean, how many games have been delayed? Big games with huge studio money have been delayed until into next year. The Division just got delayed.
Yeah. Again.
It's a constant thing. These deadlines and then not hitting them, and it's every company, every developer.
And that's what Tim said. He said every game you've played has probably been delayed. Like, that's just how game development works. He said you come up with the schedule at the beginning, and then halfway through the game, you know what your schedule should actually be, and you adjust.
Yeah. You gotta take a guess at the beginning, I guess. But, you know, I mean, I'm not even against, like, the basic crowdfunding where you're not an investor. I kickstarted a hat that says movies on it, so.
You did that.
Did you kickstart potato salad?
No, I did not.
You didn't do that?
I'm not into potato salad.
No, I mean, I appreciate that eventually sort of went to charitable causes, but
well, it's funny because Kickstarter in a way is like, it's so much like the producers in real life, right? It's, you can make more money with a flop than with a hit, right? Like, if you do a Kickstarter campaign and you raise a ton of money and then you say, oh, our company went under, you get all the money, right? Like, I know there are safeguards now to put that in, but I like figured the idea that there's another level of something that people have to be thinking about here, and there's another level of accountability, like you said, for the companies. Because if you have accredited investors investing in your project, you can't just make more money with a flop than a hit. You have to have something to show for it. And not necessarily that Double Fine needs that pressure, because I think they, you know, they delayed Broken Age, but they finished it, and they delayed Massive Chalice, but they finished it. Like, they haven't ever – the only thing that they have, like, completely walked away from really was space-based EF9, and that wasn't – crowdfunded. That was early access. So, which, I mean, that whole area is a gray one that we could get into a longer conversation about, but.
Yeah. It's kind of a bummer because I really liked Space Base.
I did too. I was really disappointed when they walked away with that. But somebody in the chat earlier said too, like, if your game studio has made, you know, dozens of games and there's only one that you can actually consider like a complete failure, like, that's a pretty good track record.
I had some fun with it, so I wouldn't call it a complete failure.
No, yeah.
It's certainly a disappointment, but...
A disappointment is a better way of putting
it, spent, like, hundreds of dollars on bad cheeseburgers, and... So, I mean, like, if I spent 20 bucks on Space or whatever, it's...
I
get that there's, like, a promise or, you know...
I don't mean to get all down on Double Fine right now. I mean, honestly, I came away.
Tom, damn it.
I just wouldn't harass them for, you know, on Twitter for days and days.
Well, I mean, when you have
hamburger, you know.
You know. Yeah, people wonder, like, why anyone, you know, I've seen people sort of on Twitter, like, well, you guys only care about this stuff because Tim Schafer is, you know, part of some sort of Bay Area cabal. But, I mean, I don't know. Maybe not everyone is just loves the games that they've made over time as much as most of the people, I would say, that I know who've been playing games for a long time. I mean, mm-hmm. would cite Psychonauts as a classic.
I mean, honestly,
people are excited about Psychonauts too because the first one's a classic. I don't think there's any conspiracy there.
No,
honest to God, Psychonauts was one of the reasons I wanted to become a game designer. Like, that game really was inspirational to me when I was younger, and I was playing it wrong, as I told Tim Shaver. So
stealth braining.
Yeah, I literally was playing that game like Sam Fisher. Like, I was trying to sneak up on people. It was terrible.
Our former editor in chief, Logan Decker, is probably. You might fight him on it, but he was probably the biggest Psychonauts fan I knew. He would, when he was doing Cat Fantastic, he would just, every once in a while, he would do a question where he just didn't say anything, and the correct answer was Psychonauts. And you just had to know that.
Okay, maybe he's got me beat on that one then. But I really enjoyed that interview. I came away from it.
Nice guys.
Encouraged by the whole thing. I think that they have a very... a vision for Psychonauts 2 that I am glad they have, I guess, is the way to put it. It sounds like they really know what they want out of it, and they know where they want to go with it, and that's very encouraging.
Yeah.
You know, whether or not that means it actually comes out that way is a whole other thing that's completely to be seen, but it is an encouraging experience that we just had with them.
And just final note on that is they're not doing it to the extent they did with Broken Age, but they're also going to be making videos periodically, two-player productions about the development.
Yeah.
And I highly, highly recommend you guys watch Double Fine Adventure if you haven't, just because it's a nice, candid look at, you know, how hard it is to make a game. And it'll probably be interesting to see some of that with Psychonauts.
Like Tim said, free on YouTube. So if you just search in YouTube, Double Fine Adventure, two-player productions, you should be able to find it. Mm-hmm. But let's move right along. We have had a crazy busy week, and Tim Schafer, the time hog that he is, took up the first half of the show. So what we're going to do is a little bit of a lightning round of just kind of the big things that happened in PC gaming this week. We don't really have enough time to just go into one thing, but so much stuff happened this week. And we talked about Psychonauts for the first 50 minutes of the show.
What happened?
But you know what? I love Psychonauts, so that's okay. Basically, I've got a list of at least a dozen things that happened or trailers that came out, stuff like that. And I just kind of want to go through them and see which ones stick. You know, we're going to be throwing spaghetti on the wall. If something interests you, let's talk about it. Okay. Yeah, lightning round. So did either of you guys see the Star Citizen 2.0 trailer?
Yes, I did.
Yes.
Any thoughts?
It looked like a cool game that I would like to play when I can play that game.
Yes.
You guys don't have to go that quick.
Okay.
Wait.
I agree. I thought God, now I have to go. Okay. Moving on.
You can talk about it.
No, I just agree. I think this is the first trailer that I've seen where I've seen a lot of cool Star Citizen things, but this was the first trailer I saw of Star Citizen where I was like, this looks like a really cool game I want to play.
I saw actually a YouTuber, I forgot who, they made a video where they were jumping through like star systems chasing this one giant ship together. And one guy was like calling out commands as like he was role playing like a commander and saying, hop to do to do, starboard, whatever the terms are for, you know, and
port aft.
Port aft. Starboard. Poop deck. I don't know. Like,
you would not do well in space.
That would be bad in space. It was gorgeous. It looked like a lot of fun, like controlling the ship. They looked like they were having fun. For the first time since Star Citizen's been kind of rolling around in the PC gamer collective consciousness, I was like, holy shit, this was kind of neat, and I want to play it. So.
I agree. Now we can move on.
Oh, okay.
That was lightning enough for
me. Let's go.
So this one is a long title. The title might take up the whole lightning round.
Okay.
Dr. Langoskov, the Tiger, and the Terribly Cursed Emerald, a Whirlwind Heist, which I talked briefly with Tim and Greg about. This is Crow's new game. You guys have all played it, right? You both played it. And I played it as well. And
it's
basically,
great.
We're not going to talk about the plot right now because it is literally 15 minutes long is free. And so go play it.
Yeah.
If you have a PC that has any kind of graphics card in it, you can probably run this game. There's just no reason. Just go play it. Basically, if you can't remember the name, just type in Crows into Steam or like into Google and you'll figure it out. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a blast.
Yeah, it was great. And it is only like 15, 20 minutes, but you can definitely replay it and like
notice a lot of things.
Look around, find a lot of stuff, which is
you can do things differently, like not significantly, but get some different dialogue.
And this is William Pugh.
Pugh? I think it's Pugh.
I don't know.
Yeah. I actually Googled the pronunciation of this name earlier. Yeah.
Yeah, William Pugh, who was sort of one half of the team that made the standalone version of the Stanley Parable.
Yeah.
Along with Davey Reedon. So this is like the first sort of thing his sort of new studio that he's heading up has put out, and they put it out free. And he said, because we have lots of, you know, plans coming in 2016. I thought it was interesting. You pointed this out too, James, that Justin Roiland, who's the co-creator of Rick and Morty, was in the credits as a voice, but I have no idea where he would have been a voice, because there's, without spoiling anything, like I don't think there was a him voice, but I know
maybe it was the guy screaming With the tiger?
Maybe.
Maybe he was just the tiger.
That could be it. Maybe he was the
tiger.
Maybe
he was just the tiger. Ooh. Well, the two know each other, right, through VR.
Yeah, I was going to say that because I interviewed Roiland a while back. If I can just segue this into my own and they talked about a little bit about how they're working together on VR games. So this is sort of the first concrete sort of indication of their collaboration, which is a cool thing. They seem like two really like-minded people with a similar sense of humor. And this is like interesting also in like the incredible contrast it has to Davey Reedon's very like introspective, personal, kind of like intimate dialogue with the player sort of game in The Beginner's Guide, his follow-up. And then you have William, what was it?
Pew. Like a church.
Pew.
William Pew.
Or like a laser gun, yes, James.
It's much more on the Stanley Parable side of things.
Yeah.
It feels like a really direct continuation of that idea.
Mm-hmm. That was the vibe I got, too, is I played it. And this might be mean, but I played it, and I was like, oh, that's where the talent in the Stanley Parable went. Like,
oh, I don't think that's true.
Come on.
I know. That's mean. I know. I'm not trying to knock Davey Reardon at all. I believe,
was sort of the original
Definitely.
Creator of the mod, and then Pew sort of came on, and they worked together on the standalone one. So,
I'm sorry, Davey Reardon
has some really good
qualities,
even though I did kind of review it sort of poorly
because
it just didn't like settle in with me as something quite as affecting as some of the tearful Steam reviewers felt.
Well, yeah, and the intent of these games is pretty different, I would argue.
Yeah, so.
Very different, yeah.
I'm sorry, I was...
Now you have to backpedal for
moves. Yeah, backpedaling. No, but what I meant was basically that the whatever the hell the name of this Long Crows game is, Whirlwind Heist, we'll just call it that.
Okay.
That felt to me like a sequel to the Stanley Parable, whereas The Beginner's Guide did not. I guess that's the way I meant it.
But both, I mean, The Beginner's Guide, kept the sort of unreliable or maybe over-reliable narrator. I don't know. It kept sort of the interplay between player and narrator and design. Both of these games have done that. So that is still a theme in both of them, and that's interesting. And I guess, other games that have played with that, Bastion has. But I love seeing anyone experimenting with just the form of interactive games. Her Story played with it a bit. The narrator being unreliable or in some other way, like making use of the interactive nature of games was sort of like the words aren't coming to me, Tom. Lightning round.
Let's go.
Well, here, real quick before we move on, Schnitzel Frenzy says, there was a tape recorder at the very beginning of the game. You can take it and play tapes that are scattered throughout the game.
Yeah.
Justin Roiland was the voice on those tapes.
Oh, okay.
I missed the tape recorder entirely.
Dang.
So
we all have to play it.
Yeah, we got to play it again.
All right. Thanks.
There's another 18 minutes of my life gone. Jeez.
I know.
No. Dang. It's really fun. You guys should watch it or play it. Watch it. Either one. Moving on, Overwatch I want to talk about really quick because it's me and I like Overwatch a lot. I'm the only one here who's played Overwatch.
Yeah.
But the beta is shutting down on Thursday, and I'm going to cry about that. It's shut down to like January. I know.
What are you going to do with yourself?
Nothing. I'm just going to the answer is I'll finally start playing Divinity Original Sin Enhanced Edition. That's the answer.
Oh, there you go.
But the other thing about it is that they announced all of the maps and heroes that they're going to be adding to the game after the game launches will be completely free. They'll be patched in. They won't be DLC.
Nice.
Which I think is just like one of the smartest things they could have possibly done for the health of that game. I think it's just brilliant that they did it.
So if I understand it correctly, you can have Overwatch for $40.
Yes, you buy Overwatch for $40 base fee. You can pay $60 for an Origins edition, which basically just has skins and then items in other Blizzard games. And that's coming out in like June or something like that.
Seems like a good deal.
And then you get all of the maps and all of the heroes after that for free.
Cool.
Which is awesome. It's just awesome. It's just a really, really smart move.
In contrast to something like Battlefront.
In contrast to something like Battlefront or something like a lot of other multiplayer shooters.
What do you buy in Battlefront? I haven't played it.
There's a season pass.
Oh, of course.
$50.
Of course there's a season pass. What was I thinking?
Yeah.
Free characters and maps. Always good.
This one just got brought up in chat, so we'll jump down to this. Paragon, Epic's game that's like a MOBA third-person shooter kind of thing, and made in Unreal 4. They've been teasing it for like 5 weeks, and it's been ridiculous how long they've been teasing it, but we finally got a gameplay trailer. It looks kind of like they're targeting Smite in that sort of market and that type of game, but it actually looked pretty cool to me. It was like, I was surprised that another MOBA interested me, but it looks pretty cool.
I can't not think of like Shepherd's Dialogue Wheel whenever I hear the name of it, though.
Paragon. Yeah, there was a moment where Andy they teased the name of the character they were going to announce the next week. The marketing was out of, like,
it was bad.
It was just over the top. And Andy Chalk, our news writer, was like, he guessed it was like some name like Krongrak or something like that. Yeah. And he was like, I bet it's going to be a big, awful looking alien. And then it was a big, awful looking alien.
But like, what are they going to do? I don't get it, because like, maybe if I was into MOBAs, I might be peaked, like my interest might be peaked, but as someone who's not really at all, this was just like white noise to me, like another one of these. It seems like big developers, rightfully so, want to get a piece of that pie, and to me, like, I don't know, like, what are they going to do that separates themselves, or what do they have to do to separate themselves from anything that's out there already?
I'll tell you exactly what. Yeah. Okay, you ready for this?
Sure.
This is going to be really hard to understand, because I've thought it through. They're going to make it in Unreal 4, and it's going to look super pretty.
Wait, that's
the plan.
No. I mean, we don't know that. We don't really know anything but that trailer, right? We don't have a lot to go on.
Yeah, they just released about a minute of gameplay, basically. But yeah, there is a question about that. But the thing that interested me about the trailer was I was like, wow, this is really pretty. So yeah, shiny. I think that'll get people. I think it'll get some people.
Unreal is known for the shine.
Well, we can move on from Paragon. Let's see. Division being pushed back. The beta got pushed back out of December. I think we already talked about that a little bit. This is kind of an unfortunate one that we'll go to next. Skylake CPUs are bending.
By themselves?
Under the weight of certain kind of pressure from their parents, yes.
Mm. One of ours bent.
One of ours bent when we attached a cooler to it. And that kind of sucks, man.
It does.
I don't know what else to say besides that.
Well, and I guess people are trading blame.
Yeah.
Like, I guess these CPUs are the I don't know the terminology.
The wafer.
Thinner. they're thinner than normal. And they're supposedly within, like, the cooler manufacturers are supposedly within, like, the regulations for, or recommended, like, regulations that Intel gave them, but they're still bending things, and no one really knows who to blame.
It's unfortunate. It's just a shitty situation.
Be careful.
Like, yeah, just basically PSA, be careful if you're attaching a CPU to a Skylake, or a cooler to a Skylake CPU.
Yeah, I guess be gentle. Do we have any sense of how widespread the problem is? Is this like, it happened to us, so we were like, oh shit, and then
it happened to us. It happened to at least a couple other sites that we've quoted in our article about it. Mm-hmm. So it's not, it probably is not like an epidemic or anything, but it is happening.
More common than it should be.
It shouldn't happen at all, is what the answer is.
Be careful.
But yeah, so that's kind of unfortunate. If you do get a new CPU, just be careful. Be informed. Here's a weird one as we continue this weird last week in PC gaming lightning round. Deleting games from your Steam library.
Mm.
You can delete games, finally. They said that Steam was like really oddly against this for a while, and now...
Well, I can see why they would be against it. I mean, it's kind of weird, right?
Yeah.
It's like... It does no harm to you to have it. You can hide it. You just own it. But I guess if you're really, like, embarrassed about owning something so much that you want all record of it gone, you can destroy it. People keep citing Bad Rats as something they want to delete.
Why?
I don't know why so many people bought Bad Rats in the first place, given that its reputation was being not good.
Speaking of rats, I have 3 copies of Vermintide in my Steam library.
Whoa. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
I have a public beta test copy, a closed beta test copy, and the main copy.
If you like have an old beta thing stuck in your library, you could get rid of it.
That's why I'm excited about.
I have a hypothetical. If if you guys had to delete one game in your library.
Ooh. That's not like a crappy beta test thing? Like
Not, okay. Yeah.
Like a real game.
Real game.
Wow.
Ooh. There's no way to say this without being mean, is there? You just gotta be brutal
about
something. What?
Assassin's Creed 3.
Ouch. That's the only one I've beaten.
Really?
Ouch.
I've been on this rant. I've been on this rant on this show.
You should have played a better one.
Now you know. That's what I keep being told.
Yeah, you beat the bad ones.
Yeah.
I guess, you know, another thing that makes sense are like free-to-play games that like once you hit play game, now it's in your library, but you don't play it anymore. And it's like you could get it back at any time. I think Clicker Heroes and will get rid of.
There was a period of time, Tyler Wilde, where I would constantly see your Steam account playing Clicker Heroes.
I had it open. Because you can just leave it open all day and you just get stuff.
Yeah. It's the best game.
I was investigating the psychological effects that constantly having Clicker Heroes open might have on the psyche. I just haven't written that up, you know. This was research. This was for science. Uh-huh. I didn't actually want to play it.
I feel like my answer – I don't have a specific answer, but I have a criteria. Okay. I would go through and look at whatever game I search for most in my library and delete whatever had the most letters in common with the beginning of that game so that I could get to it quicker.
Sure.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So like if it was Civ, I would like delete – something with a C at the beginning or something like that.
Like Clicker Heroes?
Like Clicker Heroes. Yeah. I never installed that game. You should. I have pride.
Even worse. Oh, yeah. Those Clicker games.
Moving on. Continuing the lighting around. Oh. Telltale is making a Batman game, which is hilarious because we were talking on the show like 2 weeks ago about like Telltale should just make all of these games. Ha ha ha. And like now they're making a Batman game.
Batman seems cool, but I don't want to play as Batman.
No.
No, I think it's like someone who used to be at Telltale on
Twitter. Jake Rodkin.
Yeah. He was saying that they had like – he was kind of reminiscing on Twitter or like in a screen of a conversation he posted about how back when he was there, they had this like – this crazy idea where you play as Commissioner Gordon and you just have to like clean up Batman's crime scenes. And he's like screwed everything up. He's ruined all the evidence. Like bringing DNA everywhere and people all beaten up and bloodied and like, I mean, he didn't go into that much detail. That's my imagination taking the idea of like, imagine a game where you have to like, you have to go to Batman's crime scenes basically and sort out what happened.
I'd be interested in playing someone like an ancillary to Batman, someone who's like kind of just on the perimeter as opposed to like, I mean, how.
You're probably going to be Batman, though.
Yeah, but how interesting.
That's what I was
going to
say. Is we brought this up in the office when it was first announced, too, of like, oh, I don't want to play as Batman. It'd be funnier to play as Commissioner Gordon or better or whatever.
Yeah.
There's no possible way you're not Batman in this Batman game.
Right? Like, because like, you take that pitch, right, to them and go, so, okay, we want to make a Batman game, but it's not going to star Batman. In fact, Batman is not even in it.
You need to be laughed out of the room.
Yeah. I mean, I guess, unless you made it like
a villain game. If you made it like about the Joker.
I mean.
Gotham?
Yeah, the show.
Oh, right. But Gotham is like.
Bad.
Gotham is like.
It's not very good.
Well, I've never seen it, but like, so I have no opinion on the quality of the show. Sure. If you enjoy Gotham, that's fine. It's just that I thought it's the whole deal with Gotham was that it was like earlier and it was all the backstory of that world. So that's kind of where the appeal is of that. And maybe they could do that. Maybe they could do a prequel to Batman sort of thing and get away with it.
I just don't know how you make Batman an interesting character. I'm sorry. Like, there's plenty of good Batman comics out there, but I don't know if his psychology has ever been the main draw. It's always been...
It's easier than Superman.
Sure. Yeah, but what are the moral choices going
to
be?
Do you know how hard it is to make a Superman video game?
Do you punch the guy or not punch him?
You know what the final boss of the Superman 64 game was?
I don't.
A series of tornadoes.
Yeah.
That was the final boss.
Well, see, Superman's thing is that he always has to decide between do I go in for the punch on the villain or, oh, no, there's a bus full of people now teetering. So I have to say – because he always like has to minimize loss of life, right? So then that's – what puts him in dilemmas where it's
and
like,
Batman never kills is his code, right? So you can't really break that code. You can just, like, how bad do I almost want to kill this person?
Yes.
I'd love it. I'd love it if every, like, fight scene, when you finally subdue the villain, you're given a choice in the Telltale game of, like, don't kill villain, kill villain. And if you ever click kill, the game just ends. It's just like game over.
You lose.
So moving on.
Batman wouldn't do that.
Let's keep going on lightning round. Yeah. Star Wars Battlefront. A Star Wars Battlefront developer said that it may, quote, lack depth for hardcore fans. And I want to bring this up because this is something we mentioned on the show a couple times of Star Wars is kind of meant for a wider audience and a casual audience, and is that such a bad thing? And that's basically what he said as well.
I sensed it, like, as soon as I got into the first, like, beta, that mm-hmm. I was like, oh, yeah, this is made for my 10-year-old nephew.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so it's just – I just wanted to bring it up because I thought it was interesting that you actually heard a developer, like, admit it, you know, to a certain degree. And it's not even admit. Just be like, yeah, you know, we made this game with a wide audience in mind. And if you're looking for a Counter-Strike level shooter, you probably aren't going to be happy.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. That seemed pretty clear to me that was the intent behind the game, was that, like, anybody, even people who don't really play a lot of games could, like, get something out of it.
Tyler knew it already, so we can move on.
No, I mean, I'm just like, even if it's, I mean, I think the problem with that thinking is that, I don't know what the problem with that thinking is, Tom. What's the problem with that thinking?
The problem with that thinking is that it's taking too long, and this is a lightning round.
Damn it, Tom. Pew, 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 pew. I need to collect my thoughts here.
Nuclear Throne is out of early access, and we brought this up actually with Tim Schafer just before the show. Mm. Nuclear Throne is this cool game, this kind of like bullet hell-y sort of thing.
Vlambeer,
yes, is the developer. And it just like really, without telling anyone, just was like, poof, hey, we're out now. Like 1.0.
Well, they told PlayStation Experience people.
Right. Well, they told because they're coming to console now. So
that's why they told them. Yeah, the PC just kind of, we were out. They were out. So,
but it's cool. If you're interested in bullet hell games, look up Nuclear Throne because it's no longer in early access.
Wes, I don't want to misquote Wes, but Wes was saying he would make an argument for Game of the Year. Maybe not of the year, but in there somewhere.
Wes in the Twitch chat is now saying in all caps, I love Nuclear Throne.
There you go.
So, yeah. Wes Fenlon endorsed, everyone.
Oh, you know it's good then.
This is a good one for Tyler.
Uh-oh.
New game announced, at least today, if not today, very recently. Hatoful Boyfriend Holiday Star, the sequel to the popular pigeon dating simulator you reviewed.
I'm like one for like eight on like the commentary here. For these lightning round topics. I don't think it's going to go any better. This one I might just trail off into confused, stayed up too late playing Rocket League. I didn't actually review Hatoful Boyfriend, though.
Oh, you didn't? I just could have sworn you did.
No. Someone else did. But I love what it is.
Yeah.
So what is Hatoful Boyfriend? What is the original?
Well, it basically starts out like a dating sim with pigeons. But
wait, you can't just breeze over like that.
Yeah.
It's a dating sim where you are dating pigeons. And you are not a pigeon?
I don't know. Are you a pigeon? I can't remember. I think you are. I don't know. But the point is, like, it starts like that. But then it's kind of like trying to explain Undertale to someone, where it's like you don't want to tell them too much, but like it's more than that. It becomes like this really, really interesting game once you sort of know its secrets.
So this is a holiday version?
Yeah, this is the sequel.
It's straight up sequel. It's not just a little like
That's what I've been told by our website. Yes, and it's called Hatoful Boyfriend Holiday Star. So if you were interested in the first one, there you go. That was announced.
I wish I had a Hatoful Boyfriend.
This is a three part lightning round part.
Oh,
there's like a ton of Final Fantasy news that just happened. Final Fantasy VI. It was confirmed is coming to Steam next week. It's like the weird mobile port.
It sucks.
It just looks so bad.
Sprites? What's wrong with sprites?
All the sprites got replaced with these very smooth looking things, and it just looks awful. It looks like somebody, like a young person, like was like, I'm gonna reskin Final Fantasy for me.
I wish they would do with these games what they did. By they, I'm referring to game developers in general. Yes. With Monkey Island, where you could like actually the new look to Monkey Island was amazing, but they also had just like a little toggle and you could go back to the old graphics. Like That way, all the work you spent with the, you know, updating the graphics, you can put it in there, but I think most people want the original sprites.
Yeah, I agree. But the main difference I see between that and Monkey Island, or this and Monkey Island, is that the Monkey Island Enhanced Edition version, like, looked nice.
Actually looked really good.
These sprites just look bad. Like, they didn't change the backgrounds at all. So if you're interested in that, like, it still looks good from the environment art. But and if you're interested in playing Final Fantasy VI and you never have because you never had the means, like, it's a great game. So you should play it now that it's coming to Steam. But it's unfortunate that it's not the original classic SNES version.
It's too bad there's no possible way to play the original somehow.
Yeah, we'll let you figure
what
that one
shame.
Out. But in other Final Fantasy Remake news, Final Fantasy VII, which is not yet confirmed for PC, but every time they do anything for it, the Final Fantasy VII Remake, that is, it says PlayStation 4 first, which usually means and everything else later.
It's also being developed in Unreal.
Right, so it'd be easy.
I mean, like, yeah, free money, guys. Come on. It's not free money.
But it's not free money, but yeah, it really seems like
more money.
My God, like, just looking at Steam, I don't know. Like, 5 years ago, I never would have imagined, like, even in our review section on the site, like, this many JRPGs and Japanese games in general.
It's nice.
I'm really happy about it.
Like, now it just seems like a given that Metal Gear Solid 5 came out on PC. Like, yeah, of course it did.
Obvious. Yeah.
But, I mean, it strayed away from the PC for so long, and so many are coming back and realizing. And I think one of the great things about Steam is, like, you can take a 15-year-old game or a 20-year-old game and, like, it can have a home on Steam, you know. And on consoles more and more. It used to be that you had to, like, sell a disc, basically, until, like, Xbox Live Arcade and that kind of stuff came around. But I don't know. I think so many opportunities were being missed for years and years on PC, especially from Japanese publishers. And it's, like, finally there's a realization that, like, it's this great library of games people can continue to play. Yeah.
But Final Fantasy VII, the remake, got a trailer with gameplay in it, not just cinematic, and it looks amazing. Like, we just talked about a Final Fantasy remake that looks bad. This Final Fantasy remake looks gorgeous. It's just absolutely drop-dead beautiful, and part of that is probably the fact that it's being developed in Unreal 4, but it's just really, really breathtakingly beautiful. And the only thing I have a problem with is that they completely changed the combat system.
What?
They announced that they were doing this before, but if anybody has played Final Fantasy VII before, if you haven't, you should. But if you haven't, it's, you know, it's turn-based kind of where, like, every character has this little, like, time bar that fills up. When the time bar is done, they can attack, right? And now it's, like, it looks much more like Final Fantasy, like, 10 and 13 in its combat system where you're controlling one person, it's 3D, you're slashing and doing moves like that. And this, we knew this was coming, but actually seeing it happen, I kind of miss the turn-based a little bit.
Sure, but I mean, Final Fantasy VII is still there. You can still play it the original way. And I'm more interested in, I don't know, we've been in games games have been around long enough, we can have adaptations and interpretations of older stuff and see how it might be interpreted through, like, a modern design philosophies. And that's more interesting to me. And maybe, like, from the perspective of a fan, they might be like, but I want the same. And I get it, but I don't know. Open your mind up, maybe. And,
oh, apparently I misspoke. The Final Fantasy X was also turn-based or time-based. So I'm wrong about that.
Yeah, below it.
Yeah, that's interesting, James. Just like the idea. I like the idea of, like, I'm gonna now remake Max Payne 1, but this time it's turn-based.
Well, yeah, no, I mean, okay, RPG. Well, I
like that idea, though.
I've been thinking about this, like, in 100 years, you know how Shakespeare plays are adapted into all these different settings and time periods and, you know, their original, like, poetic mechanics are stripped or rearranged. I like the idea of getting to a point in games where you have maybe Kojima, like, remakes Mario or something in 10 years. And I don't know, like, that's cool to me. This isn't quite to that, but I know it's episodic. It's got a new battle system, and it's, you know, it's being interpreted in a different way, which is, it's more incentive to play and more incentive to revisit than just like, well, it's, you know, his biceps look slicker and, you know, like realer.
I agree. I know what you're saying. Yeah, I think that's definitely a nice sentiment. But there is also part of me that knows that if they just made his bicep slicker, like, I would enough. Just play it. Like, I love Final Fantasy VII. So
sure. Biceps yeah. technology is like the main reason I play video gosh. Games.
Oh God.
First person shooters.
You're in like a renaissance right now. Then with the new Unreal and everything.
Love the biceps.
Good rain.
The last piece of Final Fantasy information is that there was a leak, kind of, from SteamDB or whatever, where a bunch of games that could potentially come to Steam, not guaranteed. Let's preface this very clearly. Halo 3 was in one of these SteamDB leaks a long time ago and right. never came to Steam. So none of these things are confirmed, but there was Everybody's Gone Intrigued. To the Rapture. There was Final Fantasy X and Final Fantasy X-2. And then the biggest one was there was Half-Life 3. But all of that is to be taken with a huge mound of salt because a lot of those games that get leaked in this way don't actually show up.
Yeah, they were able to like manipulate the new help site to get like package names for real package names for stuff. And
like they
I mean, of course there's one for Half-Life 3, but it could have been made – It could have been made 6 years ago.
Yeah, and they also, I think,
have nothing in it.
SteamDB came out and said developers can, before they're out, they can name that package information whatever they want. So it might be just like an inside joke. It? Someone saying Half-Life 3. You know, that seems like
that's
a plausible inside joke or, you know.
But Final Fantasy X and X-2 is exciting.
That's possible, yeah.
Those are games in the Final Fantasy series I've never played, so I'd be really interested in trying because I hear they're great. I hear Final Fantasy X is just really, really a good game. I
haven't played any Final Fantasy game except 7.
Ouch.
And I didn't finish 7 because the original PC port was not very good.
It was bad.
Pretty bad, and it crashed like partway through, and I was like, screw this, I'm going to play Command & Conquer Red Alert.
So the final bit in the lightning round is a shocking lightning round. Oh. System Shock 3 got announced by the same people that we had on the show a couple of months ago.
That's true. Stop making things up, Tom.
Or got teased to be announced. Excuse me.
No, I
Paul Neurath, or his studio, right?
Yeah.
They're going to be heading it up. And I never played either of the first two System Shocks because I'm a young baby child.
I have, but I can't remember like anything. I don't have any interest in
comments. I've like dabbled in them. I played a lot of 2, and but I played all of them after the fact, like by many, many years. So I think a lot of people who played them probably fell in love with the the horror and the story.
I remember them being very, very difficult.
Yeah, they're very, very difficult. So I don't know. It's cool that we have another one coming for those people and for people maybe who haven't played a System Shock game. But
real quickly, also Wes in the chat says if Final Fantasy X and X-2 aren't actually coming to PC, I'll eat Tyler's hat. That's how confident I am. Tyler's hat is pretty dirty.
It's pretty grubby. Yeah, you don't want to eat this. My head sweats a lot. So.
But isn't it weird that System Shock is getting a remake and a like sequel in the same kind of span of time by two completely different developers? There was even a tweet, right? Or there was a... Was this tweet or a Reddit message? I think it was on a Reddit thread about this, where this person was like, "I was a developer on System Shock 2, and like I didn't hear about this until this got announced just now." And like me and one of the other developers were like joking about we should kickstart a sequel to the game, ha ha ha. And then it got announced. Like,
I don't know how they're going to do it though. They're pretty small. Yeah.
It's almost definitely going to be kickstarted or a crowdfunding campaign because that's the way that Underworld Ascendant. Was
right
the spiritual successor to Underworld.
Working on that and this, I mean,
that's big.
I feel like that's a lot of hiring to do.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying it can't be done or won't be done. Just like, wow, that's a big and you know, for to do a sequel to such a beloved series.
It's a lot of pressure.
Yeah, it is.
No pressure, guys.
Well, that's I think we covered everything that has ever happened last week.
Wow.
Well, everything. There's probably lots more, and if you do know of lots more, let us know right now. We're going to jump into the Twitch chat Q&A portion of this show, so if you have a question for us about anything that's on your mind this week in PC gaming, tag us with @PCGamer in Twitch chat and send us your questions that way.
Must be lightning related.
It must be lightning or shock related. Yes. No. And if you are listening on iTunes or watching on YouTube, you are always welcome to come to twitch.tv/PCGamer Tuesdays at 1 p.m. Pacific time.
Was that a question?
That was a question. Pacific? No, that is when it is.
Where are we? Is this the Atlantic Ocean?
I forgot.
No, Pacific. The Pacific. We can see the Pacific Ocean, basically, right from our window.
Where does it count?
Window.
Where does it begin?
The bay. We can see the bay either way.
I don't know. Water stuff.
Water stuff, man. It's tricky.
Yeah.
Tricky water stuff.
Think Clink asks, how will... I think this is for Tyler.
No, don't.
Asks, how will lighting affect your dank Garfield memes?
How will lightning affect them?
I think so.
Oh, well, that... because, see, when the dank memes die, you use the lightning to reanimate them. And then you just keep them going forever. You keep bringing up the same stupid things about Mondays forever and ever, and Jim Davis will never die, and neither will Garfield.
Some good Twitter tips, guys.
Yeah. Just
Legend Thresh Dairy, which is a League of Legends reference, asks, what do you think about NA getting a best of three and EU getting a best of two in League of Legends? I actually hadn't heard about that, but that sounds lame. So that's my hot take on that is, I think, any sort of disparity. I don't like that.
I never heard about this. It's bad.
I've always had complaints with different regions having different qualifications at all. Like, every esport does this where, like, North America and Europe will usually be on the same system competitively, and then, like, Korea will have its own thing, or China will have its own thing, or like the last region will just like be doing its own thing for qualification for championships or anything like that. And I really, really don't like that. I think that they should be standardized across all platforms when you're competing for the same end goal, right? Like in the Blizzard World Championships, obviously there can be other leagues that have their own thing. But again, obviously that's really, really hard to do. I can't even read that name, so I'm just going to read their question. With Rainbow Six announcing all future DLC will be free, will other multiplayer games be forced to do something similar to avoid losing players?
Well, I mean, I don't know that Rainbow Six will necessarily like be the poster child for like how to do it, because people are still miffed you pay $60 for that. That said, I mean, Overwatch is doing something similar. So I think it's a trend that's happening, and it's a welcome trend. And it certainly doesn't split the player base. You've seen games like TF2 and CSGO, and all those games like live on updates consistently, and you've seen their player bases grow or stay at a healthy rate. So I don't know that Rainbow Six is going to be the catalyst, but I certainly think it's a trend.
Jumping off of that, Billy Bobble asks, James, are you still playing Rainbow Six, and how long do you think you'll continue to be active on it? Because you were a reviewer for it.
Yeah, and you
gave it a 90.
I really think that's a great game. I played a bit this week. After I get done reviewing a game, sometimes I just want to take a break because it's work. I certainly want to go back to it, but also the Bloodborne DLC has been calling my name. Sorry, it's a PS4 game. Forgive me. I've been meaning to go back. I'm going to play tonight because I'm going to write more about it. And I think I could stick with it for the foreseeable future. It's not something I feel like I have to play every night, but I don't play games that way.
In8 Music asks, what do you think about esports in general, and do you see casual games such as Rocket League with tournaments? Real quickly, just want to address the question, what do you think of esports in general, is kind of like, I like competitive gaming, but to anybody who thinks that esports or competitive gaming is like a fad or something that won't exist soon, like,
yeah,
it's here to stay. It's making money. People like it. Just stop having the argument about, like, is it a real thing? Because that is not an argument to be
had.
We
have a whole section to pro
competitive
gaming. So
sports aren't real.
We clearly think it's here to stay.
Yeah. Yes. That being said, I do want to take this opportunity because you brought up Rocket League. I've been surprised with how slowly Rocket League is growing as an esport.
Yeah, what does it do? Game. What does it do? I don't know what it needs to do, because it seems to me it has everything. Like, it's fun to play. There's a high skill ceiling. It's super fun to watch.
It is. And it's easy to understand.
It's also, like, yeah, instantly readable, and I've talked about this before, so...
I'm surprised.
I don't know. Maybe I just need to get into the competitive Rocket League scene and just start covering stuff. But because there are tournaments, there is competitive play. It's just not. I guess for whatever reason, it's just not growing at the rate something. It doesn't appear to be like in the public consciousness as something that would ever sort of like grow like LOL or CS:GO or Dota.
But maybe we're biased by having already seen LOL grow to what it is, right? Because the only reason that Heroes of the Storm became an esport as quickly as it did is because Blizzard just shot money out of a cannon at it until it became an esport. Which, for the record, there's nothing wrong with that. It made it successful.
It takes years. I mean, the main difference I see with Rocket League is that it has a very simple and complete rule set. And as far as the, meta, there's different strategies. When playing as a team, you can have different players in different positions, use sort of different formations, and have team members with different sets of skills. But the cars are essentially all the same, and there aren't like the sort of complicated strategies that you'd find in like Dota. I saw Chris Thurston, who's our editor of Pro, wrote about this like insane Dota play where someone used like this, just used these interlocking sort of mechanics of the game to have like an invisible copy of himself running back and forth, and then invisible players running through, or a visible copy, and then like noticing that his copy of himself running back and forth like moved like 10 pixels when someone bumped into it, and then like knew where the team was. Like, Rocket League is about, wow, they pulled off that friggin' sick dunk and like did a sweet backflip and dunked it, and that was awesome. But there's no like large scale, like all these characters and abilities and things mashing up. There are no abilities. Maybe that hinders it to some degree, because people don't feel like they can get like really super deep into like the specifics of numbers and elements of the strategy in that way.
You know what I think needs to happen? Cities need to sponsor Rocket League teams. The city of San Francisco had a Rocket League team that was playing against like the Boston Rocket League team competitively, everyone would be watching Rocket League.
Well, that
go to the VR
stadium. Yeah, I'd agree. I mean, it is so much more like a traditional sport, because like even in Counter-Strike, which has, which more than say Dota or MOBA has sort of like real world metaphors for guns, but you go into, the bullet spread and all these little details. Whereas Rocket League is cars hitting balls, so it's like, it's interesting. I hope it becomes bigger. I want to be on a kick-ass Rocket League team.
I agree. I really want to see Rocket League succeed. I'm not 100% sure how they get there, and maybe it is just time. Maybe it is. Hopefully, we'll see. But that's all the time, speaking of, that we have for today. Thank you very much to James and Tyler jumping in. And thanks again to Tim Schaefer and Greg Rice from Double Fine, who are now long gone. But I still want to thank them for being here, and I hope you guys enjoyed hearing from them. We'll be back once again next Tuesday, 1 p.m. Pacific time, same place right here, twitch.tv/PCGamer. If you are at all interested in commenting or letting us know how we're doing, or if you like us or not, if you hate us, that too. Please go to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/PCGamer, and this will be live today to comment to your heart's content on, or you can go to PCGamer.com/podcast, and it will be the first post there. I'll say guest Tim Schaefer. You'll know which day we mean. But thank you very much to everyone who joined us, and we will see you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye. Goodbye.